Welcome. This is the UX Design Cast podcast series, and my name is Carl Vredenberg. This is episode number 29 in the series, and this is a tutorial podcast format. And the topic that we're going to be talking today about is a rather intriguing one. But before I get to that, I want to tell you who we have on as the panelists for today. We have, first of all, Julie Santilli, who has the role of IBM Visual Design Community and Tools Lead, and she's in Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Julie.
Good afternoon, Carl.
And next, we have David Schwartz, who has the role of IBM UI Architecture Patterns and Assets Lead, and he's in Seattle, Washington. Welcome, David.
Hi there, Carl. Nice to be here.
And last, we have Bob Jones, who is the IBM User Experience Community and Tools Strategy Lead, and he's based in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, great. The topic that we have chosen to talk about is one that is rather topical and is one that a lot of organizations go through and think through and debate endlessly, it seems. And that is, what kind of organizational structure is optimal for user experience design? There are a variety of different types that we'll get into. And I would like to suggest off the top that IBM has had some significant experience in this area for many years. We've done practically every version of every model that exists, and we've also written about it. I know that I had a section of the user-centered design book that I wrote some time ago that also talked about this topic. But it's one that still continues to come up on a regular basis, and we have learned over the years what some of the real benefits are, one or the other, of these models. And like I say, had some significant experience on this as well. We like to share those insights with you. There's no easy and quick answers here, but there's a lot of experience to be able to share with you. And we hope to make that available to you in this episode. So before we really get into talking about sort of the advantages and disadvantages, it might be a really good idea to, Bob, if you could just provide a little bit of an overview of the different kinds of models that typically are thought about and practiced as well. Bob?
Thanks, Carl. There seems to be two general models that are currently used, not only within the industry, but have been used by IBM over the years. The first is what I call a centralized model, where designers, user experience practitioners, and related resources tend to be organized within one department or unit reporting to a common executive. These often can be called, you know, user experience departments, design departments, and all of the resources there are working on a variety of different projects or products across an entire portfolio. An alternative to this centralized model is more of a distributed model, where individual designers, user experience practitioners are distributed out and working directly on the products that they support. That is, they will actually report into the department for the product that they support. And we call this a distributed model. Today in IBM, we have about 400 user experience and visual design practitioners supporting literally hundreds of products across IBM. And we employ a variety of different organizational models. Some divisions or product brands are organized in a centralized fashion, and some are distributed with individual practitioners reporting directly to the products that they support. And I think, you know, each case can make its case for the relative advantages and disadvantages of those different models. And there are some benefits and drawbacks to each one of those models. Let me also point out that some organizations employ what we might call a hybrid model, where in fact there are a concentration of some resources in one organization and individual practitioners working directly on the products that they support. I know that one of the organizations that practices a centralized model is IBM's Media Design Studio, and maybe Julie can describe a little bit more about the relative advantages of that organization.
Sure can, Bob. Yes, so the Media Design organization has several managers, and within that group there's approximately about 30 designers collectively, plus a couple of UI developers. And within that group, we have interaction designers, visual designers, production designers, and they cover a number of products or projects across the IBM software portfolio. And this group has been around for about 15 years, and the uniqueness of this group was one of the first organizations within IBM to create a community of visual designers primarily to work on the visual and interaction design of our software products. What we've developed is a good solid team from the team leaders down to the production team, which does all the core graphical elements and technical diagrams, up to the team leads and senior designers, who then look at the creative direction strategy across the product sets. And what's great about it is that there's a lot of sharing going on across the work that is being done. There's a number of show and tell meetings that the teams the team as a whole shares with each other, and sharing of the assets, templates, experiences, and there's a lot of direct relationships, of course, with the development teams, working closely with them in a virtual or the real space. So it's been a quite a successful environment, and has carried out in terms of being optimized, or even more so as we go through the years of our experience and being picked up by other parts of the organization. So there's a lot of collaboration going on, a lot of consistency and integration across the products, a lot of focus being developed, of course, specifically on the user experience within our products. We're stronger in numbers. It helps to really bring some core competency to the design solutions that we provide. The development community sees the group as a core competency for deriving directions in good design practices. And there's a lot of reuse, as I mentioned earlier, sharing of the great design work that's being developed.
Of course, the centralized model can potentially lead to a situation where there's a sense of the user experience practitioner, designer, being outside or isolated from the development team that they're working with. One approach that's been effective is really a hybrid model, that you have the user experience practitioners with the development team, whether virtually or physically, but relying on reusable assets such as the design patterns that we've mentioned in previous instances of this series, as well as widgets or other development artifacts that embody key centrally determined designs for those distributed or embedded user experience practitioners to really leverage. So it really gets to both of both worlds.
It might be important to point out, too, that realistically, when we look at a company like IBM, and it's probably among the largest, maybe the largest around with regard to the designers that we've got across the board in all geographies and all countries and the like, and that IBM really has a hybrid model itself anyway, right? Because we have development teams all over the world. We have designers that are either, you know, with their development teams or using a model like Julie described that still is one of a, you know, at a particular location. We as a IBM corporate design leadership team, in some respects, also provide sort of the glue, as you were saying, David, with regard to the reusable assets, the communication, the collaboration across the board, at least at a higher level, to foster some level of community, to provide some education and training and some sharing of experiences and the like as well across the board. But I wanted to pick up on one other thing that, Julie, you were saying about the the studio model, which is truly one that is not a matter of just a bunch of people sort of kind of sitting together or being in a department. I think there are also, as you were saying, a lot of, you know, direct collaboration, direct sort of sharing of experiences. And in my experience, also an ideal kind of structure for bringing on new members of the team. So you've got somebody that's coming on that's more junior. That person may well be working on a particular product. If they didn't have the studio kind of model around them, they may well be lost. I mean, they not only do they not have a manager that knows the topic area and can foster and develop their career as a designer appropriately, they may also not really have any experience to be able to rely on from more experienced designers versus the studio model, which really does provide the capability for, again, not only having managers and leaders that can help guide the career and further skill development, but it also is the case that if that junior designer were doing a piece of design, you can be assured that other more senior designers in the group will actually be contributing to that design, reviewing it and the like. And so all the benefit to kind of the development organizations is really one of getting the combined experience, if you will, of the whole studio, even though they may actually have a more junior designer working on a piece of, you know, their product, for example.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to having, as David's put, you know, the assets, having the collateral out there for the community, and having the mentorship and support. On the context where you have a designer working in, I call it a foxhole space, where they are physically removed from their development team, and they may not have a direct design team to be working with. They rely heavily on a lot of the guidelines, standards, and best practices that have been established by the company to help them to move forward and become a leader and become, you know, that they're the core designer within their development team. And, you know, when you've got 100 developers to one, it's quite overwhelming. The second part is you rely heavily on your peers extended out in your community. Sometimes you build mentorships within some of the strong leaders within that group as well to then help you, guide you, provide consultation. I know a number of times I've been requested to provide consultation and mentorship with some of my design peers to help them, bring them through the process of education, help them to become aware of what's available to them, and then just be there as a comrade to review, do some peer reviews of their design work as they work through their development cycles of their design work. But in definitely within a studio model, you have junior designers come on board. You know, there's a well-established, or hopefully well-established, one education program you have to guide them through, to get them up and running within the first 6 months, so they're familiar with all the tools and assets that are available to them, and guide them along the way, so that we have sort of a career path for that individual as they work through their apprenticeship and then eventually become strong enough design leads within their own particular product.
I think that's a great point that, you know, even in a distributed model within IBM where individual practitioners are working directly with the development teams and report to the same manager, they're still leveraging their virtual community, the peers within their same brand as well as their corporate peers across different brands for some of that design collaboration. I think in many ways the practitioner who's working on a distributed team faces some of the biggest challenges. Often they can't afford to be a specialist in terms of, for example, just focusing on user research or UI design or evaluation or even on a particular type of technology. And they're often called upon to do a little bit of everything, the jack of all trades or the Renaissance person who's really forced to provide all the user experience support within the team. And that's really where they can leverage their colleagues across this virtual community, deploying this sort of hybrid model that we've been describing.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. It's it, it I'd like to pick up on the point that both Julie and Carl mentioned, that is the availability of senior designers to help more junior designers. With regard to the hybrid model and the use to centrally provided design assets and development assets, it's critically important that those assets not just be manufactured by some centralized group and then distributed for the rest of the organization to use, but instead leverages and utilizes all the insights of senior designers from across the business that are knowledgeable of different product sets and projects and businesses, so that the design assets do truly represent the best knowledge of all these senior designers for more junior distributed people to leverage.
That's why the hybrid model works really, really important. I think it works really well, too, because you are the senior designers are working directly with the architects and lead developers. They're fully versed in that particular product or project, and then they can help drive, you know, the kind of results that you want in terms of the design directions, the assets, and then those assets, as you said, can be fed back into the larger community for reuse. There's a, you know, I think you have to have a good combination. It's also important to have a really good relationship with your UI developers, to have them become also, you know, fully understandable and have a good awareness and appreciation for design, to make that hybrid environment work successfully.
It's not inconceivable that you would have the UI developers as part of the user experience organization, in fact.
Correct. Yeah. I think it's ideal if you can.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be the truly centralized model where you have all the people with direct responsibility for delivering the user experience in one organization. And I think one of the other, you know, advantages that you get with a centralized organization or a hybrid model is you get a certain degree of organizational visibility of user experience. Typically, you might have a manager or an executive in charge of the user experience or design organization, and that executive or manager is probably going to be involved in a lot more strategic planning, a lot more in the product decision-making process or the assignment of resources on a particular project than a typical user experience practitioner who might be distributed in an individual product development organization. So I think that is probably one of the other advantages of a centralized or a hybrid approach, increasing the importance and the visibility of the user experience.
Another advantage of a centralized approach is, you know, we all know from our experience that some points in time have heavier workloads associated with them than others. And so with a centralized approach, where you have a team of experienced designers, they could collaborate on certain projects when they become more demanding and go back to their, say, second-tier projects when the demands of the first-tier projects are less consuming. You don't have that flexibility when all your resources are distributed.
And in addition to that, I think it's also it's an opportunity when you have the diversity of deliverables and skill opportunity available to you in a kind of hybrid or a centralized model, when one wants to seek opportunities to increase their experience in a particular area, then you can work with your management to, you know, try to work through some kind of a percentage of work effort spent on a particular area of focus, so that you can encourage that individual and increasing their opportunities for advancing themselves in different skills and open up new opportunities and careers down the road.
I think another more practical aspect of a centralized organization is the ability to share budget and resources across a variety of different projects. So, for example, we have many different usability labs at our different sites within IBM, and it's probably inconceivable that any one particular product could afford to support a usability lab's budget in and of itself. Whereas if you have a centralized organization, The costs of that are actually usually distributed across a number of different projects, and it makes it, you know, much more feasible to do, you know, to make those investments in those larger resources.
Now, I'd like to suggest a slightly different direction for our discussion, because I remember I used to run workshops at the professional conferences for many years, and I, over that experience, really realized that while we may be talking about our experiences with regard to this topic from an IBM point of view, IBM is probably, as I said earlier, one of the biggest companies in this area and has worldwide staff. It has lots of designers of various disciplines. But a lot of people listening to this, you know, may well be, you know, the sole person, you know, that has responsibility for design within a company. They may be in a very small team. And so I wanted to just suggest we explore for a little while here what the advice may be in that kind of environment. And maybe just to start that discussion, one of the things that I used to always advise people is to be really cognizant of essentially building a centralized group, in the sense that if you only have one person, you're probably going to be it's going to be hard to be decentralized, because you are fundamentally a single person. But what's really important is to try to, if you're just starting out, try to, when you're introducing a user experience design type group within a company, try to link it to as high up in the company as you possibly can. And so you've got an executive leader that can have a strategic view, because usually it takes people that are higher up in a company to be able to have that strategic view of the importance of design, as opposed to the nuts and bolts of getting out products on time and on budget, for example. So there's some advantage there for organizing yourself so that you're higher up in the organization. And the other one is to explore the topic of the number of design practitioners you really need. And people have often talked about, well, you know, how do you go beyond one, as many organizations have? And the argument that I always used to make and still believe, and that is that the same analysis that you do to determine how many engineers, how many programmers you need, for example, for the company that you're working on, you wouldn't, you know, be conceivably thinking about having only one necessarily. Usually are looking at, you know, a number of developers or engineers or programmers, and you got to do the same analysis basically with regard to the number of designers. And when you take that point of view, you start to realize that in order to really have quality deliverables come out the door, you really do need to have the right set of the right kind of disciplines in the organization focusing on design. And again, then once you start to get more of these, then you can start to get into these topics of, you know, whether you, as you have more and more designers, whether you really go with a centralized model as you probably started off with, or whether you have those designers sit with the, you know, development teams themselves once the, if the company gets a little bit bigger and the like. But I just wanted to address the topic of, you know, smaller companies and what advice we might have with regard to the ways in which they should think about their design skills and how to organize them.
I think that, you know, I think that's a great point, Carl. And I think this is where we can also apply, you know, some of the lessons we've learned from some of our Agile projects. And that is, if you are the sole user experience practitioner or the sole designer on a project, and there's obviously more work than you can possibly take on yourself, leveraging related disciplines to help with that work. There's the notion in Agile development that you know, people will fulfill multiple roles at particular points in time. And for example, a user experience practitioner can teach some of the basics of user interface design to the user interface developers. thus freeing them up to handle the more complex user interface design scenarios. Likewise with usability testing. A certain amount of usability testing can also be done by a product test organization, and the user experience practitioner can teach some of those basic skills. I don't think this removes the need, eliminates the need for experienced practitioners, but I think it offloads perhaps some of the more basic tasks, freeing up that practitioner to focus on the higher value add activities.
I'm going to chime in with that, Bob. I think that it's important to have the development team involved in the types of activities, tasks, and deliverables that a user experience design person is responsible for. Therefore, they become more aware and sensitive to the involvement, the skills, the depth of work that is involved in some of these tasks. And it's certainly we're, as you said, in an agile space, even before the agile notion came about, just having a good multidisciplinary team with a developer and marketing person, a designer, sitting down and designing together collectively to work through a design solution, that there's a better appreciation, that they get more involved in the actual design itself, and they'll then have a sense of the involvement in the tasks, the kind of the work and resources that is actually required, and that helps to kind of drive some level of buy-in when it comes to the when it comes to requesting for more resources down the road, but also gets the team engaged and gets them excited about being responsible for that design. So I think there's kind of it's that involvement, that real team collective experience of working together and designing together and sharing and becoming aware of all the design experience and design skills and value that a UX user experience and designer can contribute to a particular solution.
And I guess what I'd say is that, in addition to organizational issues, there are interpersonal issues. When you have a large collection of designers to either distribute it or centrally, there's usability and user experience design tends to be a more formal element of the overall development and design process. When you have one person in a company that is trying to support a good number of projects or products, the interpersonal relationship between that designer and, for example, the lead architect or the project managers associated with these various development efforts becomes that much more critical. And it might seem silly, but I've found in the past that just having lunch with the people regularly, buying them coffee regularly, can do tremendous good in terms of keeping you at the table and ensuring that what you have to deliver is acknowledged and valued and integrated.
Yeah, interpersonal factors are incredibly important, aren't they, in any of this kind of work, because it's ultimately people working together that actually yield the deliverables that are actually good quality or not. And I think you're absolutely right, David, that I think those are our core attributes of success on these kinds of projects. Now, you mentioned the focus on Agile, both Bob and Julie. I think what's interesting to point out is that in some respects, this notion of central versus not is a little different than it was many years ago, because many years ago, it was sort of like you do a piece of design and you throw it over the wall to the next phase of the waterfall process, let's say. And, that person would then, take that design document or whatever and do some development work on it or whatever. The teams were not quite as working as one. And I think, Julie, as you were saying, what we're now seeing, what we saw with, the multidisciplinary teams in our user-centered design work for many years, as well as, Bob, as you say, the work on Agile now, really makes the designer part of the team, regardless of where they are based and what their home base is, so to speak, in terms of organizationally. They are actively involved in, with the rest of the development team, the day-to-day work on and week-to-week deliveries of milestones and the like. And so for many purposes, This really becomes a question of what level of additional education, what level of care and feeding of the discipline, what kind of ideas that they get for additional thoughts and ways of innovating. And I was going to suggest to follow up on the comment you made earlier, David, in terms of, and Julie made the comment too, about the kind of reusable assets or various deliverables that can be used, that if you are in a company that doesn't have very many designers and the like, you may well have a manager that is not attuned to or a member of your discipline and isn't all that well focused on what would be good for your career. This is also a great time to be a designer with all of the resources that are around on the web. And of course, I would like to think that you're listening to this podcast and this overall podcast series would be one of those, that even if you're a single person as a designer within a company listening to this, you are at least also getting the benefit of some other colleagues at another company that are providing you some level of that kind of experience. And I would also suggest that our website at ibm.com/design also has some of the assets, and we'll have more over time as well. And of course, those aren't the only places where you can get assets to further, you know, develop your career, to further hone your skills. There are many sites around on the internet as well that you can, you know, avail yourself of to further take your own career and your own career and skill development in hand. I think it's probably a better time now than it has ever been to be able to hone those skills using a variety of the resources that are available. So I think it is an important thing to take seriously the further development of your skills and the like, regardless of these models. But of course, they can be further optimized with the kinds of organizational structures we've been talking about in this podcast series. But I did want to make the point that I think even if you are in a company that is smaller and that you're not part of a larger team that has the issues of whether you're centralized or not, you can still kind of glean the same kind of benefits in other ways. Anybody else have any comments with regard to that?
Well, it's just that we're in a special case, well, perhaps not entirely special, but as a large organization with a lot of deep experience in this area, it's not surprising that we have internally the use of well over 150 different user interface design patterns. I don't think you're going to find collections like that on the web as extensive, but across all the different pattern collections that you will find, and there are many out there, there's surprisingly little overlap between them. So if you stitch these together, it really does represent a pretty comprehensive and powerful asset.
Might be worth too, David, now that you're describing sort of what we have, and we're trying to make everything that we can available externally to the company as well, to you via these podcasts, via our website and the like as well, our Twitter account. But I did want to maybe just give a little bit of an insight into what we at IBM do with regard to the overall community. So we do have a corporate design leadership team that I lead, and that team also has two separate structures or two separate themes. One is a visual design one, and Julie on the team here really leads the visual design community and has a work group or a structure called the Visual Design Advisory Council that really provides guidance for the broader visual design community across IBM with regard to resolving problems, requirements for new tools, that kind of thing. And Bob Jones leads the user experience community and also has a user experience board, which has the leaders from each of the brand organizations across the company coming together there to again resolve, you know, common problems that might be experienced that makes sense to solve at a company-wide, you know, level, including in each of those cases, not only tools, but also additional education and the like. I also lead an IBM design board that has, you know, 9 of our most senior user experience and design, essentially executives or technical leaders, where we also deal with, you know, strategic issues with regard to this topic across the company. And then we also have a newsletter that goes out to all of the community and also any other interested party with a bunch of news, promotions, awards, new things to look at and the like. We also do a webcast once a month that also includes not only an update from our team, but also information with regard to best practices or new innovations that one of our brand teams may have come up with, and they present it to the rest of the team as well. So when we talk about these organizational structures and we talk about how at IBM, in many ways, we are fortunate to have the number of people that we do have and the kind of experience that we've had over the years, I wanted to just describe how that does work. So we do have at the brand level or at the location level, a variety of organizational structures, from one that is truly decentralized to ones that are more centralized. Some of them a studio model, as Julie described. But we also across the company really do have this other umbrella over top of the overall set of disciplines that then tries to provide the glue, if you will, to bring the IBM team of user experience and design professionals together to try to optimize the ways in which we all work, to eliminate any of the sort of redundancies, to centrally deal with issues that come up, and also to provide overall guidance and strategy for the company in the area of design leadership. So I just wanted to take a moment to describe that. I don't know if anybody else wants to add to my description of the ways in which IBM is structured and the way that we work, essentially, with regard to our team.
I think what you've just described, Carl, is the perfect example of the hybrid or virtual community. As we said at the beginning of the broadcast, there's a fairly large number of user experience and design practitioners in IBM. Yet within your department is a relatively small percentage of those user experience and design practitioners, and yet you're able to work and coordinate and collaborate with the much larger set, even though they may be distributed in the various brands.
No, very good point. And I do think that we are fortunate that we've got the amazing talent that we've got across all of IBM, and we want to celebrate and encourage each of those teams to do the best work that they can with their, whether they have a studio model or a decentralized one at a particular location within a particular brand. But we also want to, as a single company, as you say, really work together and sort of knit together the whole community to be effective. And of course, we also have that view beyond the borders of IBM too. And that's also why we are engaged as we are with, you know, our customers. We've been working directly with sort of the designers at customer locations. We also like to work with the broader design community across the variety of industries. And that's why we also have been participating in things like Twitter and doing these podcasts and the like as well. So we really, I think, have the view, and I've had that for a long time, that across the board, I think everybody benefits if we raise the bar of design across all industries. The overall human condition is improved by better design across the board. And so in some respects, our working together as designers across all kinds of industries, I think, is a really valuable thing. And so there are various levels of collaboration and communication that are, I think, appropriate. And I think designers, compared to any number of other disciplines, tend to stick together, tend to really try to, you know, help each other out and the like. And so I think it's a set of disciplines that are really quite unique in that regard. And so I think what I'm making the point about is that while there may well be teams at a location within IBM that work well together, then you look at the teams right across that whole location or that brand, they have a unit of working together. We as all of IBM, you know, working together as a set of designers. And then there's the broader sphere, yet again, of the designers across the industries. And I think if we all work collaboratively together, I think we will improve that human condition. So that's the ultimate in trying to look at our whole population of designers sort of across the world and dividing that up into centralized versus decentralized and like as well. But we'd like to, I think, also take an opportunity to invite any of you to provide any kind of input that you may have, any questions that you may have as well with regard to anything that we talk about on this podcast series or any of the other deliverables that we make available. You can, you know, get in contact with us and make comments. You can also provide ratings, you know, directly in iTunes. Of course, you can also subscribe to this podcast there. And you can make any comments there. You can also go to uxdesigncast.com and you'll see the show notes for this podcast and also the capability to provide ratings and comments there as well. So feel free to make any comments or questions that you may have there. I'd like to encourage you to also go to our design at IBM site that we mentioned earlier, which is available at ibm.com/design. We're also delighted to be able to tell you now that we have a vanity URL for our Facebook page that you can also go to facebook.com/IBM design and you can become a member of that page and get direct updates right in your Facebook feed. You can also follow us on Twitter. You go to twitter.com/IBM design. or the @ IBM Design in order to follow us there as well. And of course, you can always follow up with us in listening to these podcasts when they're available. So encourage you to subscribe to this podcast series, provide us some feedback on this as well. And I wanted to, at this point, thank Julie, David, and Bob for your contribution of the ideas to this podcast episode. And that's probably it for this particular episode, and we'll talk to you all next time, and bye for now.